And sometimes, why?
Why?
You're listening to And Sometimes Why, twice monthly long-form conversation podcast hosted by singer-songwriter, producer, and pseudo-intellectual Rob Szabo.
Hey, folks. Happy New Year. Welcome to And Sometimes Why, first show of the new year. This week's guest is Deanna Knight, singer extraordinaire, songwriter. She and I go way back to the early 90s KW music scene. We had a great conversation. Fantastic to connect with her again, an old friend. Old friends talking to each other. Not that we're that old, just we've known each other a while. That's what you know what I'm talking about. We laughed a lot. You can really hear that we're having a great time, reliving some great memories and catching up after a really long time. But before we get into that, Happy New Year. Happy New Year. I should be more enthusiastic, shouldn't I? I think that's how a lot of people are feeling. Happy New Year? How you folks feeling? I'm feeling weird, just weird. I had great holidays. I had some downtime. I had an extra week of not putting this thing out, so it's always nice to take a breather. I had a few wonderful distance outdoor hangs with family and friends. I got to see one side of my family, but not the other, because one side decided we were not going to see each other for safety, and the other side thought it's going to be okay, and we spent a lot of time outside. We had some fires. I had some great hangs outdoors with close friends around fires. You got to have fires if you're staying outside for any length of time like we did when it's winter, right? So judgment, no judgment. I don't think there should be judgment. We were safe. We were really safe. That's one of the things I've been talking with people a lot about over the last, the heavy duty lockdown is what exactly is safe and where's the line? And nobody seems to have a real definitive answer, but I think we're on the safer side of things. We're always wearing masks, obviously, anytime we're indoors with someone that we don't live with. And that's a rare occurrence. But, outdoors in public, of course, we're limiting to the absolute minimum. And as far as social activity, like I said, that was the only thing we'd done in a really long time with people. It sounds like I'm trying to justify it. We were fine. We were outside around a fire. And we, in one instance, we had our friends Stephen and AJ had written on the floor of their garage with the garage door open. They had zones marked on the floor. They thought it all out. Same thing outdoors. We had some picnic tables going around a fire. We sat down. Anyway, I'm getting through it. Can you tell I'm scatterbrained? I was saying earlier, I feel weird because I had that connection with people over that holiday season I'm just talking about. And now I'm back to my apartment with my partner, Kat, just the two of us. And it's like, oh, right, this is what we're going to do for the next probably 3 months until spring, right? So I'm kind of readjusting to living in 700 square feet and we get along great. We have each other. I've said that before on this. So I really am grateful for that. But I am kind of having to steel myself for the slog ahead. Before we get into the conversation with Deanna, I want to thank all of you who took part in my acoustic holiday show with Steve Strongman. It's the 16th annual, the first virtual. It was such a success, way beyond our expectations, way more people in terms of attendance, but in terms of connection too. We did these Zoom breakout rooms at the end and a lot of us got to talk to each other, people who hadn't seen each other, hadn't got to speak to each other, to see each other's faces in a really long time, got to do that. So that's good for the heart. It's good for the soul. It was good for everyone. It was good to play music with my pal, Steve. It was just a good feeling. Man, thank you. Thank you to all of you who took part.
Enjoying the podcast? Make sure to subscribe in the app you're using to get new episodes twice a month. Want to help spread the word? Leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. More reviews and ratings means the algorithm shows And Sometimes Why to more people. If you listen on Spotify, you can share directly to your Instagram and Facebook stories. It all helps get the word out. But the very best thing you can do is tell a friend.
All right, let's dig into this first conversation of this new year, this new hopeful year for a lot of us. No better way to start this year off than with this conversation with Deanna Knight. Deanna Knight is a veteran singer and songwriter. She played in the Fat Cats in the 90s. She fronts the Hot Club of Mars, and she runs the Secret Beach B&B in Gibson's, BC on the Sunshine Coast. This is my conversation with my longtime friend, Deanna Knight.
No one makes my heart dance like you. No one like you.
Just to give the listeners a little heads up, we started both of our music lives in Kitchener, I think. Well, that's how we met.
That's how we
met,
yeah.
In the early 90s. We've kept in touch ever since. And now you're out on the West Coast in Gibson's,
beautiful, BC. On the Sunshine Coast.
And you're running a bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
After having lived downtown Vancouver for years. So I'd love to hear how you made that decision and what the transition was like.
Oh my goodness. It was kind of ridiculous. I had just done my first solo album of my life, my own songwriting with the beautiful George Kohler in Toronto and some like ridiculous cream of the crop, not to drop a lot of names, but it was a real change for me after not writing my own songs and never recording. And I just took a massive leap of faith. It was huge. I always felt like I belonged on the West Coast. Every time I visited, it's like, this is where I belong. These are my people. And then I'd go back to Ontario. It's like, oh, my entire family's here. All my fans, all my friends, you know, Dave Biggs, I married Dave. We have a beautiful son. He's 14. He's huge. We have a beautiful dog. And this move, everything's so serendipitous. You know, life is magical.
So what was the discussion between you and Dave to say, okay, we're downtown Vancouver, we're living this life, we want to open a B&B on the Sunshine Coast? Like, was this something you talked about for years?
No.
How did it go?
That was so not it. Well, it's kind of interesting. I had surgery and Dave stayed home with me. He took time off while I was at home for 4 weeks. He went back to work.
That's great that you guys were able to do that, because it's, you know,
it was
when you're
amazing.
Laid up after a surgery. That's tough.
Amazing. I didn't even move from the living room. So when he came back home after his first day back, they didn't really miss him, which was the plan all along. This is what we were hoping for. It just happened probably 3 to 5 years prior to what we thought it would. And the B&B is ridiculous. It was not a plan. Now I see it so perfectly. It's such a great fit for us because we're natural born hosts. We have a beautiful stage in our backyard, in our garden. I mean,
You've been doing shows like garden concerts, right? That's what a dream.
I know. So I get to invite all my favorite people to come and play in my garden. And I get to put them up in this beautiful home and right by the ocean, right by all kinds of beautiful trails in the forest, and pamper them and dine with them and have fun. And we have a beautiful fire pit. You know, it's just, we put in an outdoor shower and
that's incredible.
Yeah.
So how did it get to that point? You said, okay, Dave doesn't have to work downtown anymore. He doesn't have to be physically there. And then you guys started talking after you got better after the surgery. And then how did it
panicking.
Come together?
I was panicking that our young boy at 8 was walking the drive with his buddies.
Okay, right.
And I was like, what? That's what's going to happen here in East Van? I mean, I don't think so. This boy needs forest. He needs a dog. He needs space. He needs nature around him, you know? Dave said, I think we can leave now. I'm like, are you kidding me? We got like precipitation maps. We started like calling friends and reaches like, okay, what's up with this community? What about
that
this school?
That was high on the list was how much precipitation, not too much.
Oh,
that's where
absolutely.
I'd be. I'd be like, you
no
got to have
winter.
Some sun. Yeah, yeah.
I like winter for a week. Winter for a week is awesome, right? And I mean, you live where you live and you embrace your community. And I feel like it is really a precious spot we found.
It's an incredible place. I've been out there a few times. My friend Joe lives in Roberts
Creek.
Yes, Joe,
I get to see Joe.
So we grew up in Kitchener and we all know each other. But
yeah.
It's the first time I ever went there. I couldn't believe that this place existed. It's a dream.
It is a dream. So this B&B is a place for musical friends to visit. The community has embraced me so much. You know, I was such a small fish in a big ocean over there in Vancouver, you know. I land in the city.
Yeah.
But I joined the Hot Club, my swing band. I've been with them 20 years, 2 decades. So I joined them as soon as I got here because I left this 15-piece big band and my beautiful recording band, who I never in the world thought would play with me live. Of course, all of a sudden I'm on stage with George Kohler and Gary Craig and I'm thinking, wait a minute, these are my beautiful songs, these beautiful musicians, extremely talented people. And lovely people were supporting me. And But I came out and Dave had been my neighbor. We knew each other for a decade already. We were dear friends. And I came out and stayed at his place right after the CD release of my solo CD, like day after my CD release.
Around what, early 2000s?
This is 2001. 2001. Okay. And I released Shadow of a Star. And then I came out here and Dave and I spent all 10 days together. And I was just like, what is happening right now?
It's just a hot and heavy romance right out of the gates.
And we had our solid friendship, which, you know, I have lots of trust issues, as many people do. And so he was my friend. And and then I went home back to Ontario. Like, what am I going to do now? This is ridiculous. How do I leave all of this? It was huge. So I'll find you a band. We'll get you a job.
Right. Because that was the main concern. Like, how am I going to keep doing music without
do what I do? I mean, look where I've gotten to. And I'm just going to drop it now. And so it was kind of weird. I mean, at that point, I'd written all my songs without accompaniment, melody and lyric. And then I had this beautiful accompaniment happen around me. And then I just tried to do like solo shows, which I did a fair number. You saw me a few times in Kitchener-Waterloo when I first started writing, and I was going to the poetry stuff because that's where I could just speak my poems and break into song if I needed to, and sort of working that a little bit and seeing what that felt like. And that was when I left Kitchener-Waterloo, and then I was 3 years in Bowmanville, which I never expected I would ever get chewed up and spit out of Kitchener-Waterloo and put into my hometown.
That's where you grew up as a child.
I grew up in Bowmanville,
Newcastle. Yeah. I want to dig into your music history in depth, but can we just talk a little bit more about the B&B? I'm so curious because my partner and I, sometimes she comes from hotels. She was in hotels for the first 10 years of our life together or around there. She worked at the Royal York, all sorts of hotels. And we always thought, hey, maybe one day when we retire, who knows, romantic notions of, oh, you could do this. I could play music. We'd meet people from all over the world. They'd come and we'd make friends. And wouldn't that be great? You guys are actually doing it. What's it like for someone?
You made that sound really good.
Well, the way you're talking now,
well,
come on.
It's a lot of laundry, I'll tell you that.
It's a lot of laundry. So how does it get split up? Like, who does what and all that kind of stuff?
I do mostly everything. Now, the first couple summers, we've had 3 summers, right?
Okay.
So the first summer was really up until just now. I'm kind of finished adding what I feel like needs to happen here. You know, the hot tub, the outdoor shower. We've got a beautiful outdoor bathroom, the 7th bathroom. Like, who needs 7 bathrooms?
Well, I guess you need a lot of bathrooms if you're having people as guests that are paying, right?
That's right. The stage was already there, which was so amazing because there's a big long, it's a long house, and there's a big long balcony overlooking the ocean. And there was a big grapevine arbor, like already a structure with a concrete platform and everything. We're like, wait a minute. That's the stage. So we just took the front off.
The plan wasn't to do a B&B either.
No.
When you guys moved there. It was like, we're here.
Yeah.
We're here. And okay, we'll do one room. Oh, no, let's do an extra room. Let's add another bathroom.
I see what you're saying. No, this was run as a B&B for 11 years. A lady ran it for 11 years because the suites are completely separate from the house, which makes it really ideal, right? And then we have two rooms and a bathroom that's shared. It's a beautiful little spot, and we weren't sure how it would really work. I fell in love with the home. I was like, events. Look at this view. I was just like, what? And I said, this place has got a lot can happen. A lot can happen here. We got to get it. And then I was like, what am I going to do? A B&B, really? Like, am I going to run this thing? Yeah, it's just been a process of how do I deal with breakfast? I'm not a morning person. I go to bed at 2 a.m.
I don't get up early to make breakfast for people,
you know?
So what do you do?
Well, I built a breakfast nook. So it's like this little 1950s designed tiny breakfast cafeteria. And so you can get cereal and toast. And
oh, so you set it all up the night before.
I do it like the Easter Bunny. I feel like I hard boil eggs and I bake croissants every night and try not to eat a croissant every night.
Right. And so what kind of people come through? Has there been a pretty wide range?
Well, this year was pretty crazy because very, very different than the first 2 years from all over the place, Rob, like you said. They are from all over the States, India, Australia, Switzerland, England, Scotland, Ireland.
See, I love this. It's like traveling the world, but it all comes to you.
It's pretty cool. I'm still a little overwhelmed by the work because I took the whole summer on, and it was insane this summer. Every room, every space people were here because everyone's like, we'll go to the Sunshine Coast. We've never been to the Sunshine Coast. And I had so many Vancouverites come through who said, I've actually never been here.
Right.
And
they
just
wanted to get out of the city over COVID,
they
too.
Needed,
I mean, we had that in Toronto. A
couple nights away, right?
Yeah, yeah. Just get away to some place that has very few cases and is
you
out in nature,
breathe.
All that. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and it's quiet here. It's quiet and it's dark. And people do have a really good night's sleep. You know, the ocean air and the quiet. I won't do all the cleaning next year. So we've already made that decision.
You'll hire someone else.
I needed to know
on.
How much was everything, you know, before I started hiring out and trying to work with other people. And, you know, we have 5-star ratings like crazy. And it's because I'm fastidious, you know. I see
you.
Little things. I have attention to detail.
Well, if you're passionate about anything, I mean, I've talked to so many people on here, and a lot of them are musicians who've made changes to their lives and done other things. And, you know, there's so much hustle and there's so much just learning on your own and no roadmap.
Hustle.
Right.
Yeah. And you're doing all the jobs. You're the publicist. You're your stylist. You're on the stage. You're the marketing. And then social marketing came into the deal. Like, I was pretty good initially. I was working it hard and staying on stage. And then I just realized I just got to stay on stage. Because I feel sometimes if I don't, I won't at all.
That'll be it, and you'll retire.
Yeah, it'll be just like...
And just do the secret garden concerts,
yeah.
For people who come to you. That
who
sounds
knows?
Like a dream, though.
Who I mean, knows, eh? Well, you know I did the singing telegrams in Kitchener-Waterloo.
Well, yeah.
That's how I kept afloat there.
Okay, so let's go back to your history.
Okay.
So this is early 90s. I remember, was it called Balloonatunes?
It was, yes.
That was your full-time gig. You created this for yourself because
bang,
you wanted to
bang,
stay
bang,
alive.
Just to, yeah. And
so
I,
you could do your original music.
We won't get into this right now, but, you know, their mental health comes into artists as well. Our headspace, our how we interact with people on a daily basis. And as you start to get more attention, do you want the attention? How do you deal with the tension? Who do you trust? I mean, the music industry is like so much trust when you start all those jobs, all the hats that we wear. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, I got to hire somebody to do this. I got to hire somebody to do this. And then things get really emotional for me. And I couldn't go do a 9-to-5 job. It's like, oh, you're going to be on Monday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And you're going to, you know, I just was never able to do that. So I knew
right.
I had to create something where it was quick and easy. I could throw on that chicken outfit. I could go and force somebody to do the chicken dance.
So for someone who wasn't
like,
there
encourage,
at the time,
encourage.
Can you describe it? So you're a tall woman.
Yes.
And you've got this chicken out. Like, I just remember seeing you.
Well, I'd go to the bank in it. I would go run errands afterwards. It was all advertising.
It was like, to me, it was kind of like a superhero thing. Like,
it was
you
funny.
Know.
It was so funny. I was so not myself, Rob.
I was
definitely a character. I loved being a character. Sally the Sassy singing Sunflower, all of my costumes had my face open so that I could really engage with people. And I always felt like it was kind of, you're in improv all the time, you know, I felt like it was kind of keeping me sharp enough to interact with people and it be engaging. And that's such an important part of being an artist, right?
How many different characters did you have? I remember the chicken.
Well, I pushed the chicken. Oh, I pushed the chicken because it was the easiest. I didn't have to put on tights. I didn't have to, you know. I pushed the chicken. But the Sally the Sassy singing Sunflower, the Cosmic Chicken, I had a Jasmine Jester, so I did sort of jestery things. I came up with a really bad one off the top. Lady Lips. Now, this is true. And then I realized, I was like, that's not going to work. And I didn't do any stags. It was really, you know, the chicken was the safest.
So let's explain it to people who weren't around and who didn't see it. So you've got the costume on.
Yeah.
It's a singing telegram. People would hire you to go into people's offices who had a birthday,
everywhere.
Something like that. Yeah.
Everywhere. Cafeterias, offices, lots of workspaces, lots of home parties, marriage proposals. I did two of them.
Nice.
Was
it all
fun.
Word of mouth? Because it was pre-internet, right?
I moved that business 7 times in the time I had it there in Kitchener-Waterloo. It was ridiculous. But Belmont Village is where finally I got it out of my house and I had a little shop and I could walk to it. It was lovely. And it was a survival technique. I could have chosen to do a lot of different things.
I just want to jump back to the Balloonatunes thing. Can you tell me one or two crazy stories?
Oh, okay. The ones that I remember. There's one where So early, the first few months that I did this, I had a gorilla costume because gorilla grams are kind of popular, right?
It's
there's a few Elvises, there's a few Marilyns, and yeah, you know, I had competition. Oh, fuck,
The fuck
there's
is a, great. It's fine on the, we run this thing. We can make it whatever we want, right?
So there was a nurse, I think it was her 40th, and she locked herself in a closet, would not come out.
And this is at the hospital?
This is at the hospital. All her friends are in scrubs around me. I'm a big fat yellow chicken, and... I'm just, you need to come out. You know what? We don't need to dance. I'll just give you your gift because I had a big balloon bouquet and I popped a balloon with confetti that came out with a message.
Right.
And after we did the chicken dance. And I guess that's why the chicken was so popular, because it was really expressive. Like it was really fun and I could be super playful with people. I never got her out of that closet. And that
she
was
never
one
came
of,
out.
No, she didn't. All her friends chicken danced with me outside of the closet.
And so everyone's having a great time. And she's like, nope, not doing it.
And then another young girl, I think she was 16. Her parents ordered it to the cafeteria.
At school. Oh my God.
I thought she was going to pass out, Rob. I actually didn't make her do it with me because she was almost in tears. And I was like, okay, honey, this is, you know what we're going to do? We're going to sing you happy birthday and you're going to take these balloons and it's going to be over. And
a gentle soul.
You
just pictured yourself at 16, right?
Oh my goodness. Just look on her face. And I was like, gosh, these parents, do they not know their 16-year-old? Did they not know that this would be devastating to her? You know, some people, like my son, he'd be right into it.
He'd be
dancing
fine.
With me. He'd be, you know.
My parents put together a surprise birthday party for me when I was 16 around then. And I was mortified because I was like, oh, do you know even who to call? I don't know if anyone's going to come. All this, like, you're just so worried about everything.
Everything.
Or I was anyway.
Yes. This young girl, I really felt for her. I actually wrote on the back, I had paper orders, and I wrote on the back of some and thinking one day I'll go back and, you know, look through things, bring back those
write
stories.
Write a book. I'd read the book. That'd be fantastic. All right, let's talk about the Fat Cats. That band, early 90s, Kitchener-Waterloo, there was quite a scene. I mean, I'm saying that from being inside of it. But you could go any night of the week and see really high-caliber entertainment.
And I did, Rob. You did that too. I used to see you out and about seeing everybody and supporting everybody. And that, you know, it was awesome. I guess it was like that in a lot of cities, maybe, because we all had more venues and there are more artists able to do their thing, right?
Maybe it's just a time and place. It was us going through our musical, whatever you want to call it, in our early 20s. So you've got all this energy. You're not worried about making a living as much as you might be later in life. Mm-hmm. The sky's the limit. That was my feeling, you know.
People were going for it. And look at so many people are still, Danny's still out there, Shannon. I miss your music. I have to tell you that. I miss that you used to come and visit us and I'd hear some songs, some Rob Zabo songs. You know, you get nostalgic, right? And, you know, we lost
you guys were
Paul
sweet.
McLeod
that's terrible.
You know, but I saw him every week and it was quite a community.
Yeah, there was so many great musicians and there still are.
Yeah.
And what was your memory I guess we're talking about it now. I can't just ask a question like that. It sounds like you were thriving. You were loving it. So how'd you get together with those guys in the Fat Cats? How'd that come together?
Oh, I fell in love with a deadhead before Kitchener-Waterloo. All those songs were in my head and a real vibe of people dancing in community. I really do love people dancing. I love the hot club for that too. People dancing. Jack Straw was a trio that started with Greg Stanley.
Joe DeLeo was in
Joe,
that band.
Joe was around that scene.
I didn't realize it came out of that. Wow.
Yeah. Well, Chris Gatchney and I sort of continued on. We played as Jack Straw. And learned a bunch of songs, but we weren't writing yet. We knew we wanted to write. And then we played in Dave, my husband, now husband's living room with Patty Flynn on bass.
Wow.
And
it's everything so incestuous. So you think back to that time, everyone knows everybody else and you're just switching members. You're in your early 20s. You do whatever you want, right?
And Deadheads will go anywhere if they hear anybody's playing the Grateful Dead, right?
Right.
So then there's just people outside and we had a great time.
This is at Dave's house now.
Yes.
This is a house party and people, right. Who's now you guys are married.
Now we're married. Yes. With a beautiful boy. And that was hard to sort of ignore. I came from choir and Barbara Streisand singing musical theater, you know, and I was like, really? Do I want to tour in a rock band? Do I want to do this? But it was such high energy and it was so much fun. And the fans are just dears, you know, they would give you gifts, they would make you things afterwards. And it was a real learning thing for me. It's like, okay, we're not going to play for free beer anymore. Let's not do that. Let's say that we're worth this.
And you were the one pushing for that in the band.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. And we got an album. I got an album out of us. So that was really
Cruelty's
good.
Cruelty's Cure, right?
Cruelty's Cure.
94.
Then I played for a year following that to pay off the debt for the Fat Cats. And then I thought I really just needed to be on my own. I was also in a long relationship at that point, and I needed to be away from that relationship as well. So it's kind of, I had to clean house.
You know, wow.
I needed
a
clean
slate. Did you guys tour
a
lot in those few years?
Right after I left. They hired a manager and paid the manager, and then they went on tour.
Oh, wow. Like, so you never toured with the band the
way
they ended
up touring?
No, they
came out and hung out with Dave, my husband. They came out here because he'd already moved out here. He was like their tour manager out here. He had a lot of fun with that. Oh, he's so passionate about music.
Because that was the thing. A lot of my friends in Kitchener-Waterloo who were in that music scene came out to Salt Spring Island or the Sunshine Coast. And I never did that. I know so many people who did that.
Yeah.
I guess you never did either. You were doing the music thing, right?
No, I never toured. You know, that's something. Staying in this industry, I always thought, oh, I'll tour and I'll just find beautiful stages to share my music on. This sounds great. You know, that was always sort of my plan. You know, I could be a super late bloomer. We don't know at this point. My songs, really, I feel like the last 20 years, I've been, you know, hiding out in the hot club and having fun as, again, a character, you know, but eventually my songs will come out and they'll be shared a little bit more.
Let's give people a little bit of context for the Hot Club. So that's more of a gypsy jazz kind of an ensemble.
Yeah, 20s, 30s, swing jazz.
And you've been doing
Django
that for...
Django-inspired 20 years. Can you
believe
that?
Holy shit, I didn't realize. So that's ever since you left the Fat Cast.
That was a magical story too. You want to hear that one?
I do, actually. That's what we're here for, Deanna.
Dave, he said, we'll get you a band. We'll get you a job. I own my place. Let's just make this happen.
And this is early in your relationship.
This is early. This is 2001. And I was like, really? Can I do this? So then when I did make the leap, within 2 months, I was playing at a Spring Equinox, singing a cappella at this spring festival. Wheat and the Barley was playing. A Celtic band was playing. And I was like, oh, my next project. I always thought I'd be in like a Pentangle, Steel Eye Span kind of project. That has always been something that I thought would happen in
my love
career.
Hearing this. I didn't realize that was where your heart is.
And so I approached the band, of course. It's like, hey, I'm new in town. Any chance you need a female singer, you know?
Right.
So Mark Dowding, who's in the Hot Club of Mars, said, well, I don't. But, you know, our vocalist just moved to Toronto from the Hot Club of Mars.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, he said, would you consider that? And I ended up meeting up with them. But prior to this, Dave said to me, he says, there's this band around town. They're called the Hot Club of Mars. I can really see you doing this stuff. Like, I could see you. This would be a good kind of music for you, you know? So the name, as soon as Mark said it, I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, yeah, come on out. So I didn't tell Dave. I went and auditioned for the Hot Club. They hired me. Michael Dunn, sweetheart, hired me. I mean, he's had singers for this band for years prior to me. He hired me and we booked a gig and I still didn't tell Dave. And it was in the Sears perfume department of all weird things in front of the elevator.
Why didn't you tell Dave? You're keeping it a secret.
Wanted him to come and see me in the hot club. So he showed up. I said, well, they hired me, this new band. You should come and check it out. He said, of course, I'll be there, you know. And it's the hot club. He almost fell over. It was one of those fun things that you could do to surprise people, you know. But anyway, I've been with them ever since. And wow. And swing dances. There's all these swing dance clubs, like in Abbotsford, in Langley. We could play these fabulous dances for people who really could swing dance, right? And that is
that's
and
a
I
good
come
time.
Home and like I'm fully entertained on a high because I've just sang and have, you know, it's such a beautiful way to be, right? I feel really sad that artists. I don't know what the heck are we gonna do. I don't know how this is going to dance out. I can see it in a few little ways, but I'm not getting like the full picture. I know. I mean, look at us. We're now talking to each other online and
yeah,
I get to see your face. And I mean, but it's different, right? It's if you were sitting here in my living room.
But we'll get back there. I mean, it seems like, I mean, I'm no authority on how this is going to play out, but it seems like the vaccine's going to come. It'll be a good year or so before everyone who needs to get it gets it. Things will level off and hopefully there'll be some.
And I guess we'll hold on to all the silver linings because there's definitely been lots of those.
Yeah. So. For me, I don't know what it's been like for you. For me, it's been such an exercise in really emotionally realizing how grateful I am and reinforcing that gratitude for so many things that I might otherwise be taking for granted.
Mass of that happening. So yeah. Isn't that really exciting? So this massive shift in consciousness, this sort of new way of being, hopefully it will, you know, the planet needs us so desperately right now. It's crazy. So I feel like, yeah, humanity, maybe we are figuring out who's important to us and what's important to us and how to spend our time, be in our homes. I feel like people are probably, so many people created outdoor living spaces and gardened this year. And people just don't normally do that. It's like we're busy, 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 right? You got to do.
I know some people who've done that, who've essentially looked at it like maybe this is like a sabbatical, early retirement, you know,
with
an end date.
The introverts are loving it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, with my partner Kat and I, it's almost like this is what retirement might feel like. I mean, we're together almost 24/7, and I feel bad for people who don't have that and who don't have a relationship where they're happy to be together. That would be hard.
Yeah, but, really hard.
That's what I'm saying. Gratitude for what you do have. So I wanted to talk about your song, the new song that you sent me. Is it called Blessed to Witness?
Blessed.
I got all like.
Yeah, you got all crazy. Go way back.
I got all like choir pronunciation, gospel pronunciation.
Rise up with your wishful heart. Know that we are blessed to witness.
That's probably my favorite song of yours I've heard ever. And we've known each other for almost 30 years. Can you talk a little bit about what brought you there? Because we're talking about COVID. I kind of felt like it was related. Maybe it's not.
No. And a lot of the songs that I have written, I write about loving the planet and loving ourselves and healing ourselves, being awake to things and realizing beauty. And anyway, that's what I've always written about for my songs. This one in particular, though, I am very excited because I have never really played an instrument.
Right.
You know, I've never been disciplined enough. My brain doesn't work in that way. And I bought this ukulele in February and thought, just put it in your hands every day. So, and then COVID hit. I was like, well, this is perfect.
Perfect.
have this now.
Yeah. Learn a language, learn an instrument.
Yes. And that was the little lick off the top was just the first thing. And every time I sat down, I kept doing it and doing it. It's like, well, this is something. You know, songs are funny that way, right? They kind of knock at your door. You're like, this isn't going away. So
yeah. It's just pulling at your pant leg.
It's just you know? Looping around in my head. There must be something there. So that's... As far as songcraft goes, I admire people who really sit down and discipline. I hope at some point I am connected to an engineer person because I'm just not that techie person. I love to think that I could sit down and loop with myself and create soundscapes and of what I hear because there's all this stuff that I hear in my head.
Right.
So it's been more about making relationships with other musicians who can be with me and pause with me. And I'd love to co-write more. the B&B was a big sideswipe. Like the last 3 years have been go, go, go with that.
I didn't realize you were managing the Fat Cats. I'm bringing it back to that because it feels like there's a string. Like you've always been an artist.
I'm a control freak. What can I say?
Well, is that such a bad thing if you're able to hustle and make a living and still do your art?
Yeah.
And you've done that your whole life, right? You had the Bloonatunes thing. You were trying to move the Fat Cats into a spot where there was some business consideration. Yeah. Let's do a CD. Let's try and get money.
With the Hotties, too. I got two CDs
with
the Hotties. And, you know,
and you were driving that.
Yeah. There's a hot club. Again, was sort of, let's just get together and play songs. We'll have some fun. If people want to hire us, great. If they don't, you know. But that's beautiful too, right? It's so nice to think that musicians of that caliber can be in that headspace. It's like they were retired, right? But for me, it was always, let's get this recorded. Let's make sure we have decent video. Let's, make sure this sounds pretty good. And
is that fun for you, doing that kind of stuff? Because depending on who I talk to, some people are happy to just play and that's enough.
Oh, I would love to just think about the music and the writing. These songs, again, Rob, these are characters, right? Singing the swing stuff is, you know, you're all sassy, it's all polka dots and cleavage, you know, it's like.
So it doesn't feel totally authentic to you? Is that what I'm hearing you say? For
who
you
are?
Not
like my stuff. Not like my songs. Yeah.
I get that. I mean, I play cover music and I've continued to do it my whole life as a way to stay alive. And, you know, you're playing other people's songs. It's music.
It's so bookable.
It's fun.
The Hot Club
people
is fun,
love it.
Right?
There you go. Yeah. Right.
And it's wide demographic. People love gypsy swing. Like they hear swing. The little kids are bouncing around. The seniors got their toes tapping. You know, I mean, outdoor summer concert series are my favorite place to be. Mm-hmm. So doing my own stuff, which kind of puts you to sleep. It's a little dreamy sometimes. Wait a minute, is that person sleeping?
This is art, damn it, right?
And I foresee some great recording, just me not being so much on stage, but really being in my voice and sharing some beautiful songs. That's what I foresee for this. And I will continue to play on my stage, of course, because these stage concerts were fantastic. We've had Coco Love here.
Oh, nice.
Chris Ronald here. Oliver Swain.
Voice.
Michael Friedman. Karen Graves lives here on the Sunshine Coast. I mean, there's a real wealth of people on the Sunshine Coast, but also touring artists, right? If you do the loop, you hit Vancouver, you head over to the island, you go up, you come over at Courtney Comox, you come down through Powell River and you hit Gibson's and you head back to Vancouver.
You want it to be a stop on the touring trail.
I want it to be a stop because we can do Tuesday, we could do Thursday, right?
I picture staying at your B&B and having that as an extra added bonus and you're in this beautiful atmosphere.
Yeah, it works
what
for a lot
be
of people. Not all the guests would stay for the show. Some of them just had plans. They want to be in the woods. Amazing.
Right.
People come here with their bikes all the time and they come to get close to the water and be in the woods. And that's just phenomenal. You know, something we didn't talk about, Rob, is when I did move here in 2001, I thought, okay, I do have to make some money. And I don't know how this Hot Club thing is going to unfold. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't bring my name out in front of the Hot Club until halfway through that. So it was always Deanna Knight and the Hot Club of Mars. And Deanna Knight, you know, trying to get my name out there in some way. Then, oh, you're that girl that sings with Michael Dunn, you know. And yeah, so that was an interesting dance with the Hot Club, 20 years of figuring out how to do that. And it was fantastic.
I've had a lot of female performers on here. And often what comes up is a notion of gender relations. Now that I listen to you recount your history, and I think it's always been you with a bunch of dudes in a band. And I wonder, now that I put myself back in that time, at the time, it was really felt like a boys' club. The 90s music scene in Kitchener, right? There was really not
was
that many women around.
I was the girl rocker.
Right. And I always wondered at the time, like, why are there no female rock bands? Why is nobody, you know, culture was different.
It's so hard.
I just love to hear you talk about that or what your experience has been.
Oh, gosh. That's a whole other show.
But I mean, I don't want to railroad you, but at the same time, I imagine you have a lot of things to say and a lot of experiences to share. And, younger women listening to this might learn something.
It definitely was highly dominated. I mean, we hadn't had Lilith Fair yet. Lorena McKennett was just starting, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. these women who decided to just take it into their own hands, mm-hmm. Was just starting. You're right. And it was pretty, there was a young poet who put on a woman's poetry event and ended up recording it that whole story is not in my brain right now. Intuit. She called it Intuit.
Okay.
And she made a cassette. Anyway, there was all of us together. And I did a Mother's Day show where I showcased women artists at the Volcano.
Right. This club in Kitchener in the early 90s.
Yeah, one of the Bird Sisters was there. Tana Slim maybe was there. And anyway, gosh, it's so foggy. Seriously, that was foggy times.
To we go back.
We stayed up late a lot and had a lot of fun. And but for Mother's Sake, I called that event. I loved producing. I've had a real love of producing cabarets, you know, like I did the Wickman Night Show, which was Scott Wicken, my sister Mandy, who you know is a songwriter as well.
Yeah. I love her voice.
Yeah, and beautiful voice. And and myself. So we did the Wickman Night Show at the Button Factory a couple times.
Right. And so you put those together and that's a whole thing too, like putting together a variety show like that.
Because I love talent. I love seeing people who have that magic something, right? Like you can work and work and work. And, you know, I did a lot of Kiwanis festivals, right? When I was young. And I had a friend who would rehearse and rehearse and rehearse and I would get first. And it's just because there's something, right? There's a tone or a vibration in some people's voice or a quality of connecting in a slightly different way. And I don't even know what it is. Maybe it's because I'm ADHD. my son, through researching his ADHD, I realized, okay, I'm undiagnosed, but there's different neural pathways that people use to access information or to be aware of things, you know, You know, I've been on stage since I was 5. People were crying all the time. People would come up to me and say, "You made me cry." Oh, gosh. I'm sorry about that. You know me, I'm hypersensitive, right? It's like, I feel bad about that.
And
it
was a compliment. They're like, no, you made me feel something.
Yeah, I felt something. And so I always thought, you know, this is a gift. How do you work in the music industry as a woman and be true to that gift or to continue it? Because I was never one to want to sass it up. I mean, it's funny that I ended up doing it in my 40s and 50s, right? But back then, I didn't love that attention, right? Is, you know, it for me, it was
always like
place.
A support thing. And hearing you, like having this talk now and going through the history, hearing you talk about having to rely on other people because you weren't an instrumentalist and you're only doing that now later. And mm-hmm. so to have to rely on these relationships in order to express yourself, mm-hmm. that's a thing too, isn't it?
Well, I did a lot of acapella and I love singing acapella. I just do. Because when you sing acapella, you really nail it, you know, just really be in that moment and be confident. I think for me, I've just always lacked confidence, you know, it's like it comes and goes.
you got to stand on a stage, but still, it's because you don't have the confidence, right? If people only knew.
It's so funny. It's weird too. I think my, stage fright is getting worse as I get older.
Is it for you?
Yes.
Oh, me too.
Bizarre.
Way worse. I was never, I never gave it a second thought. And then sometime in my mid 40s, I was like, what the hell is happening to me?
Right.
I never had this kind of anxiety. I mean, I know how to play. I've been doing this for 20 years. Well, like, what's the problem?
That's so funny, eh?
I've talked to a few people that have this as we get older. I wonder what's at work there. That's about all I have on the matter. Right? Just, you know, my experience. I'll get back to you on it.
We have lots of ways to express ourselves. I love the arts, all the different kinds of arts. And we have a beautiful crawl over here showcasing. We have so many, like, visual artists and photographers and potters and painters. And apparently per capita, we have highest per capita of artisans on the Sunshine Coast. And I did not know that coming here. And when I played the jazz festival here, Dave and I just decided we're going to leave Vancouver. Okay, where are we going? Got precipitation maps out. And I'm on stage and he's bouncing around because he said, nah, Sunshine Coast is too small. We need a Home Depot. That was his big gauging, his gauging thing.
Because there's going to be some rentals no matter where you ended up.
And we got over here and he bumped into person after person that he knew. I watched him just go through the crowd and I got off stage and says, Dee, this is our home. This is where we're coming. I was like, really? I thought you thought it was too small. He's like, nope. We know a lot of people here. I think this is perfect. And so we went and saw a house the next morning. This is it. How do we make it work? So, and we jumped because that was June for the Jazz Festival. I had just recovered from surgery. I really wasn't supposed to be doing a lot, like packing up a house and you know, and making a move. But anyway, we did it because we wanted Bodhi, our son, to start school here. So
I love hearing how other people make decisions. I love hearing how quickly it came together and how Dave was not originally
into it. Just a leap, right?
Yeah. Sometimes that's how the best things happen.
Well, Dave goes to work once a week now. Well, until the pandemic. Now he goes once a month. I mean, he's aced it. And
well, that's fantastic. I love the life you guys have built together. And I want to go back to the gender thing just for a minute. I've had many, many women on here, and one comes to mind, Alicia Brilla. Have you heard her music? She's incredible,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So she's in,
wonderful.
I think she's in her early 30s, and we were talking about gender and music and some of the experiences she's had with the music business. And one of the big things that came up for her was just representation when she was younger, meaning there was not as many women as you would want doing it. As engineers, as producers, as performers and instrumentalists. And
I think
back to you in the 90s in this community we had, and it was almost all guys, and you were that woman doing it that younger women could look up to and go, hey, there's a woman doing it. That's a big deal, right? Like, I feel like
you're a
pioneer, you know? That's I know, that might make it sound, but I can only say that now because back then it's like, well, we're fish in water. We're like, what? There's water? Well, that's just the way it was. It was all dudes in bands, right? And now it's different.
Yeah. And, you know, men and women are funny. I mean, we do different things. We have different goals. But I guess I just always felt like if it was going to get done, you know, I'm sorry to say, but there was a lot of real sexist stuff happening, right? Like I had boob swipes and butt grabs and, you know, just like people who felt like they were going to own you. And it's like, okay, well, all of a sudden, just because I'm working with you, you're going to own me? Like what?
Right.
What exactly is going on here? So then you just kind of got to take the bull by the horn, right? You don't really have a lot of choice at that point, if that's what you want to do. Or she could sleep to yourself to the top in a nanosecond, you know?
I mean,
that's not that hard to do.
I love the way you look at it. It's so matter of fact. These are your options.
Yeah, these are my options. So anyway, and I loved doing the telegrams and I loved being not front and center in the Fat Cats. It was fun music. There were beautiful fans. They're still beautiful fans. Do you know? Okay, so talk about things going full circle. I play in GDBC here on the Sunshine Coast. I finally surrendered to all the Grateful Dead players in Vancouver because when I arrived, they're like, oh, Deanna Knight's here. Hey, maybe she'll sing in our band, you know?
And
Tyler Gibson's moved out here, right? He was my keyboardist with the Fat Cat.
With the Fat Cat.
My favorite Fat Cat. Oh, can I say that? Yes, I can.
Oh, so this is great. You've kind of come full circle.
It's hugely full secret. He's on stage with me now. Like, how beautiful is that? I look over, he's on his keys, he's playing, he's singing. The Deadheads are dancing around in their colorful colors and being grounded, earth-loving people. And that, it's loud because the Hot Club of Mars, I've had no drums for a long time. And that's been lovely for the eardrums, you know.
I love thinking of you playing with a Dead tribute band, though. Because
I used
to look at
so
you guys
fun.
As the Fat Cats. And to me, you were like the Pied Pipers of
I am doing the
hippie
exact
culture,
same thing.
Right? Yep. And like, well, you're going to dance like this and I'm leading you. And it's and everyone would just like, it was fantastic. Like, talk about a community, right? A culture.
Absolutely.
An event.
Oh. Deadheads are something else. I'll tell you that right now.
Like, you know what
anyway,
the drill is.
Anyway, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And it's so funny when they're like, Dee, just play with us. Say what goes. I'm like, I don't know. And then two guys, there was one fella fronting, Mark Christinger was fronting the project initially, and it was JDBC. It was all Jerry Garcia songs. Mm-hmm. And I really like Chris and I, or Mark, and I thought, okay, let's do this. And I liked the bass player and And because, you know, 20 years later, you want to go back to the Fat Cats. I mean, it was fun and we had a good time. But do I want to be singing backup and, you know, end up booking and managing hippies again? Really? Is that what I want to do? But I seriously did get sucked in, because then Mark wasn't able to continue on, and two fellas came in. They call themselves Buddy and the Scarecrow, and they're wonderful. They sing beautiful together already. They know all the songs. They play really well together. I add sugar. They call me Sugar. Like, I just add this nice third harmony. I do what I want to do. I leave the stage when I want to leave the stage if they're jamming for, you know, right, they're going off for 15 minutes, right?
I always wanted to ask you about that, because some of those jams are just, you know,
massive.
Half an hour, 45 minutes, and you're like, I could come back, you know, I'll call. Go out, do your grocery shopping and then come back.
That was rehearsal with the Fat Cats. Everybody smoked. I was in a room with six smokers, and the jams would go and go and go, and everybody had, like, cigarettes were incense back then. Like, you know, people could just, like, smoke a cigarette, right? You smoked it and then you put it down.
You put it on the headstock of your guitar, right? I love it.
So I was like, what is happening right now? I came from choir and, you know, it was so bizarre.
I love hearing this.
That's so much fun. I mean, that was the pull always for me. It was like, look at the fans. They're amazing.
So I'm loving having this conversation, looking back and hearing how things were for you. Because I always wondered, because, you know, we were never tight, tight friends where we talk about things like this. But as we got older, It's nice to maintain the connection.
I remember you out there as you were one of my favorites. Talk about a boys' club, but Rob, you were always dear. You're always kind. You're always engaged. Like when we had conversation, I felt like I was really talking with you. You know, it wasn't sort of, I got to do this, or I got to head off here, or I got to, you know, it was always very, very lovely. And I do love your songs too.
Thanks, Deanna. We
get you spinning around here. I've got a DJ husband. He just DJs to me constantly. All of a sudden Zabo comes on. I'm like, yes, that's good.
So now that we've had this conversation, we've kind of gone over, you know, our shared history, your history.
My goodness, yeah.
You've had this long career in music. You've talked about the financial struggles and the hustle that you have to do. And there's always kind of the like, it's not simple. There's always this thing that you never quite get, not just you, any of us who are trying for it. So can you put into words why it's important to chase this music thing for all these years? Why did you do it?
If you have gifts as a young person, it's important to listen to that, you know? And it's even as hard as it is to kind of be in an industry where you're a product or where you're, it's not like a painter, right? It's not like, oh, I'm going to paint something and it's going to go away to somebody's house. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be something for people, and I'm going to get on stage and I'm going to be that over and over for them. And I've really struggled with that. Now I've come to a place where I feel safe. Mm-hmm. And I think I feel safe and I feel settled. And I feel like this beautiful stage can be a gathering place. I'm a connector. I always have been. I think that's why I like to create cabarets where it's like, oh, that person, they're so young and so beautiful, you know, and or they have something really smart to say and they're courageous enough to say it, because we have so many solutions. I find that the world and its structure and our system so messed up. It baffles me that we can't create more solutions. So if I could make a lot of money with a song, I would just redistribute it. That's always been the plan, you know, just redistribute cash. Like, people who have lots of cash, why are we not just feeding? And I mean, some people are, right? It's happening. And maybe this shift, maybe humanity is going to be more open to living a simpler life. We all can't live the way this unsustainable life. It's one friggin' planet. We have our water. Kind of important.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got our air and our atmosphere. Oh, pretty important. We have our food systems. Like, let people grow food and be more sustainable in communities rather than shipping shit all over this planet. Like, imagine Amazon right now. It is insane right now. Leading into this Christmas. Aw. Everybody, I hope everybody has a a good Christmas. I have this massive house. It's going to be empty. There's going to be like three of us in here. Well, we have a cat and a dog too, so.
That'll be nice. I like the thought of you guys out there in that paradise.
It does make for a really wonderful gathering space. And I guess that's, yeah, I have a long table and we're going to build under the stage. We're going to do some long table dinners under there and, you know, hope for the best. And there definitely are solutions. And I love that Dave is, you know, he's kind of, I think of him as Captain Sustainability. You know, he's worked so long to engage the public and help them vision better cities. Really, that's a big part of what he does.
That's so important.
Yeah, it's so important, and to understand how to use our resources in more sustainable ways. And he's connected to some beautiful people. We know so many people doing amazing things, biologists. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like there's lots of solutions. And I hope we can deal with our food system a little better and our mental health situation a little bit better. We are going to know that people need community. And out of this, we're going to understand how important it is, because there's going to be some fallout, you know, and I just pray that we can see the easier route. Like, that's the weird thing, too, about all these green solutions. It's like, here's a green solution.
Yeah,
we get the
win-win.
Solar panels up there. It's win-win-win.
Usually win-win. That's the way it's going to work. Well, I love the idea of ending on a hopeful note. This is great. Aww. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me and being so generous with yourself.
Thanks,
Deanna.
I really appreciate it. And, you know, you're doing a great job.
Deanna Knight, right? What did I tell you? What a fun, heartwarming conversation. So great to reconnect. Yeah, like you could tell we were having fun, right? Just we laughed almost the entire time when I was listening back. It made me feel so good. Okay, so thank you to all of you who support this show through Ko-fi, who've donated, who've supported, who've however you want to express it. It really goes a long way. A lot of you are recurring monthly sponsors, I guess might be a good word. I like the word patron. The link to support the show is always in the show notes and on the website and sometimes why.com. Why is the word, not the letter. All right, so take care of yourselves out there. Talk to you every second Wednesday in this year, this new year. The next one is January 20th. Thank you for your ears. Be kind. Be safe. Wear your mask. Stay home. Let's get through this goddamn thing, okay? Thanks for giving a shit.
And Sometimes Why is brought to you by Rob Szabo. Conversations are edited by Todd Donald.